Welcome back to another edition of the Pennsylvania Prisons and Parole Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Tarkowski. Our audio tour behind the scenes of the DOC's State Correctional Institutions continues today as we check in with two more facilities. Later in the show, we'll visit with Nikki Paul to learn about how the unique geography of Center County plays a role at SCI Rockview. But first up is a trip to Cumberland County and a chat with Bernard Comiskey, a 35-year veteran of SCI Camp Hill. Bernie, before we get started, can you tell me about your background and why you're serving as the spokesman for the facility today?
Good afternoon, Ryan. I believe I was selected primarily because of the amount of time I've had at the institution. I've been around the DOC for a few years. I started at Camp Hill in March of 1989 as a drug and alcohol treatment specialist too, and was assigned to work in the New Values therapeutic community, which at that time was the only therapeutic community in the DOC. In 91, I was promoted to a drug and alcohol supervisor, and then in 2009, I was promoted to my current position of drug and alcohol treatment manager.
So did I hear that right? You said you've been with the DOC since 1989. That's quite a career.
It is a long time, yes.
So SCI Camp Hill currently serves as the DOC's Diagnostic and Classification Center. What does that mean?
Well, initially, the DOC had multiple classification and diagnostic centers. They had one for each region of the state. There was the Eastern Diagnostic and Classification Center, which was called the EDCC at Great Ifford. There was the Western Diagnostic and Classification Center, the WDCC at Western Penitentiary, which was later changed to Pittsburgh. And then there was a Central Diagnostic Classification Center, the CDCC here at Camp Hill. I believe there's also a classification center at Rockview briefly for a period of time. So what happened is after the Camp Hill riot in 1989, the DOC decided to centralize its classification. And in 1990, Camp Hill became the sole classification and diagnostic center. Now all inmates that receive a state sentence come to Camp Hill for classification. Once the classification is completed, we keep some of the inmates here to serve their sentence in our population. However, the majority of them are classified and transferred to other institutions throughout the DOC. Frequently, people ask what happens at classification. So basically, during classification process, the offender's medical, psychological, dental, vision, and programming needs are assessed. The majority of the programming recommends occur while they're in the diagnostic center.
So we talked with SCI Smithfield last month, and we learned that's the initial reception center. So from SCI Smithfield, then every male inmate comes to Camp Hill.
Right. They were initially, Smithfield was identified to house people during COVID for the quarantine period of 21 days. And then they would send them here, and primarily the bulk of the classification was done here.
Okay, so you started to talk about classification. That's talking about finding out what programming and housing concerns and anything else that an inmate's going to need during their time with us, right?
During this period of time, they're recommended for the various programs. It can be for substance abuse, for assaultive behaviors. The diagnostic center utilizes a new Strong R assessment tool for the programming. The inmates can be started on psychiatric medication if necessary. So when the inmate arrives on the first day, they're placed in a cell, and they're given all the rules and everything. And then on the second day, they receive an orientation. During the orientation, they're provided with an inmate handbook, block rules, information regarding mails, phone calls, visits. Diagnostic center inmates can only have video visitations while they're in DCC status. Also on day two, they have blood work drawn, they have x-rays if needed, they're seen by medical. Day three, they're seen by drug and alcohol treatment specialist, and we see every single inmate, and we assess their drug and alcohol needs. They're seen for TABE testing by the education department. Then on day four, they receive psychological testing, and they're interviewed by psychology staff. So basically, most of the information is gathered within these first 4 days. After that,
what is important? What would you want inmate families to know? Because I know when somebody's loved one is sent to state prison, there's probably a lot of confusion. They're worried about their loved one. Maybe they were at Smithfield for a month. Now they're at Camp Hill. Family member wants to know where they are, how they're doing. What do you want the families to know?
Probably the most significant difference between population and diagnostic inmates is that diagnostic inmates can only be eligible for video visits. And so in reality, what I'd recommend for family members is to visit the For Family and Friends what tab on the DOC website, and it very clearly outlines how to schedule in-person visits, video visits, clearly defines the rules and regulations for visits. So that would be the primary thing. They also can communicate, they can write to their family. They're not in the diagnostic center for a significantly long period of time. We try to get them classified and out of here as quickly as possible. When they do arrive here, they're given a phone call so they can contact family if they to choose to let them know where they're at now and that they're no longer at Smithfield or if they came directly from the county.
Okay, so how long on average does it take for the classification to be complete? And then either, like you said, the small population does stay at Camp Hill, but for the most part, they're going to be moved to other permanent facilities throughout the state.
Usually we try to get that done within approximately 3 weeks. But an inmate can be here for a month, month and a half. What happens is after the classification is completed, then a transfer petition is submitted to the Office of Program Management or Population Management, and then OPM will look at their custody level and their treatment needs and designate the appropriate institution to send them to. So that might take a little bit of time for them to get to their permanent home jail.
We're chatting with Bernie Kaminsky. He's a drug and alcohol treatment manager at SEI Camp Hill, but more importantly, he's a longtime employee, been there since 1989. He's done a really good job of talking about current day operations as the DOC's Diagnostic and Classification Center. But I want to take it back a little bit. SEI Camp Hill originally opened as the industrial school at White Hill for young offenders. What do you know about that?
Basically, the State Correctional Institute at Camp Hill was originally named the Pennsylvania Industrial School at White Hill for Boys. The institution received its first commitments back in March of 1941 when 75 youthful male offenders were transported by train from Huntington Reformatory to Camp Hill. Over the next 6 months, about an additional 800 offenders were transferred by rail to Pennsylvania.
Where was the train station? Was it in Harrisburg and then they were bussed over? Or was it like one of those where it had a train stop really adjacent to the facility?
We actually have a train track that runs directly behind the facility. And it's my understanding that it stopped in that area and we're right there at the facility. Unlike other Pennsylvania state prisons that were overseen by a board of trustees, Camp Hill fell under the management of the Secretary of Welfare, primarily because we had juvenile offenders. Everything didn't go smoothly in that first year. As you might expect, there were some growing pains. Back then, the majority of Camp Hill's 1,000 inmates were between the age of 15 and 25 and were primarily convicted of truancy and gang-related offenses. So based on this, the administration believed that a get tough type discipline approach would be most effective. Unfortunately, this approach tended to alienate the population we had. It increased tension and created management challenges that resulted in some disturbances and attempted escapes. So in 1943, a new superintendent was appointed, and he had a different approach to managing this population. And he provided more opportunities for work, recreation, athletic activities. The inmates were permitted to attend movies, band concerts in our large auditorium. And since many of the inmates were adolescents, he placed an emphasis on education. If an offender hadn't completed at least the eighth grade, he was required to attend at least a half a day of school each day. If you notice, these dates were during the height of World War II. An interesting fact was that by 1944, 490, or about one half of our 1,100 inmates at that time, that were paroled and enlisted in the military. And none of these individuals were sentenced to received a commutation of their sentence or any conditions for entering the military. See, the first 36 years of the existence, the institution housed predominantly juveniles. However, in 1975, I believe, the Attorney General ruled that Camp Hill would no longer be appropriate to place juveniles, offenders. So from 1975 until 1977, 460 individuals were released to community or they're transferred to other juvenile facilities operated by the Department of Public Welfare. Then after that, in September of 1977, Camp Hill housed only male offenders that were committed as adults. However, in 2020, Camp Hill became the custodian of a small number of juvenile offenders when we opened a youthful offender program.
And the youthful offender program, that is for maybe some unsentenced juveniles. They're maybe from a county awaiting trial, and the county doesn't have the proper facilities for them, so they come to SCI Camp Hill.
Yes, and it could be sentenced ones, but they're under the age of 18, so we can't let them interact with an adult male population. So they're kept separately, and they're given programs separately.
So you mentioned some of the programming that came on from the youthful offenders, and that's still at SCI Camp Hill today for that permanent population. Can you talk about some of the educational and vocational programming available at SCI Camp Hill?
Basically, there's an sundry of treatments for education, vocational, recreational, and religious programs available to our general population inmates. Our education department provides educational programming that includes adult basic education, special education, GED, business education. On the vocational side, we have a fairly strong graphic arts program, and we have opportunities for inmates to receive HVAC certification and barber's license. We've had an awful lot of success placing our HVAC graduates in position and jobs once they leave the institution, and they get paid fairly well. From a treatment perspective, we offer all the standard inmate programs, violence prevention, batterers, thinking for a change, sex offenders, and all the levels of drug and alcohol programming. We have a certified peer assistant program, and we will be facilitating a certified recovery specialist program that will provide certifications to assist inmates in securing employment once they return to the community. Our chapel staff provides a multitude of religious services to our inmates, as well as coordinates our volunteer services. In addition to the usual recreational services, our activities department has a number of special events that include sporting events, outside concerts, entertainment, fundraising projects throughout the year. And we've also had a great deal of success with our dog program, which is the HOPE program, which was launched in 2005. We currently have 6 dogs in the program, and they're taken out throughout the institution. And if you watch staff and inmates interact, you can see that this program tends to benefit everybody. And our staff's permitted to interact with the dogs on the blocks, and that's resulted in a lot of the dogs being adopted by Camp Hill staff.
So the HOPE program is one of the dog programs in the DOC that trains dogs to get them ready for adoption by anybody, not necessarily a service dog.
No, it's for adoption by anybody. Basically, they're dogs. We kind of re-socialize them. They live in the cell with the inmate, and then after they adjust, then we put them up for adoption. Anybody can adopt them, but with staff having contact with them, a lot of times staff will say, hey, I really get along with that dog. I think I'll adopt them. So a lot of them tend to be adopted by staff.
Tell me a little bit about the staff, because we know at the DOC that we accomplish great things every day because of the men and women at our facilities, in our offices, throughout the state. So what kind of culture does SCI Camp Hill have? How do you guys fit into the community at large? A lot of our facilities are in these smaller towns, kind of far-flung places, but Camp Hill is almost unique in that it's kind of right in the middle of things.
Yes, I mean, we have an awful lot of programs that go on here. I mean, basically, one of the things that I think is most important in terms of our culture as an institution is the staff interaction. And I think one of the things that makes Camp Hill unique was that we did experience a riot in 89. And although nobody would like to experience that by choice, there was a lot of positive cultural stuff that came out of that. Back in the old days, as with most institutions, treatment staff and custody staff had different philosophies on how an institution should be run. New staff came in, were viewed with skepticism by the older, experienced staff. And the old rule of thumb was that it may take 5 years before they would truly accept you, be accepted by veteran staff. And then along comes the riot of 89, and despite the rather horrific experiences of those few days, a camaraderie among staff kind of emerged. We had maintenance staff, food service staff, treatment staff, correctional staff all working side by side, helping each other to perform essential functions. There was a true sense of camaraderie at that time that we were kind of all in this together, and we worked together to get the job done. So I don't know if it was the common experience of a riot or something else, but staff genuinely appeared concerned for each other. From that point on, your job title really didn't matter. It was kind of like a brotherhood, and if you experienced a riot, you were accepted. And that's probably is what started a bond of respect between staff, and that's something that we try to maintain today. Our staff complements a lot different than it was back then, and we have far more diversity than we did back then. Right now, our mentoring program's picking up a lot of traction in an effort to promote camaraderie and maintain this respect for each other. I think anybody that worked at corrections knows that corrections can be a challenging career, but teamwork and mutual respect can go a long way to making the job a lot easier for all of us.
Drug and alcohol treatment manager Bernie Comiskey, you've certainly seen it all. 35 years on the job. What's on tap for the next 35?
The next 35?
Yeah, you're going to be with us 35 more years? What's coming up around the bend?
No. I mean, I think I won't be around for 35 more years, but actually I don't have any definite plans for retiring yet, but as long as I like my job, I'll continue to do it. And I do still like my job.
What's the best part of your job as a drug and alcohol treatment manager?
I think it's interacting with both staff and inmates. I do strongly believe that it's important that we treat everybody with respect, both staff and inmates. If people are disrespected, it just creates more problems. So as long as people treat people respectfully and you get along with the people you work with and enjoy your work, it's a good career.
Thanks again to Bernard Comiskey. Now we'll head up the road to Center County and welcome in SEI Rockview Superintendent's Assistant, Nikki Paul. Nikki, SEI Rockview has such an interesting and long history. Can you tell us about its origins?
So the State Correctional Institution at Rockview was originally intended to be a maximum security prison to replace the Western Penitentiary. It was brought online in 1915. It is also or was the house of or home of the electric chair, which was replaced later on. I think maybe in the 80s, early 90s, it was replaced.
The execution chamber is still on the grounds of the facility, right?
The old institutional hospital building. It used to be a hospital that was located on the grounds. It was renovated into the execution complex with all the equipment necessary for lethal injections, rooms to accommodate various departments and institution staff, a news media witness area, a victims witness area for authorized individuals that were approved to view executions.
The unique geography of your area kind of plays a role into the facility. In fact, SEI Rockview is the only facility in the DOC system with a farm. How does that work?
So we have a ton of acreage. On our land, we have a farm where we have cattle. We now have pigs, and we are currently getting chickens as well. Initially, when Rockview was first built, the occupation was for the inmates was to work the farms and sustain beef and different animals. It was pretty much a self-sufficient facility. They had dairy cattle, beef cattle. They grew their crops. We even had a cannery here that would can peas, potatoes, beans that would be distributed to other facilities. That closed.
So you were
back.
The farm. You were the producers for the DOC system when it comes to food.
Correct. The cannery closed in early 2005. But we still have, like I said, we still have the beef, we have pigs, and we are getting chickens. We still grow some crops such as the peas, potatoes, bean, and wheat. And we use those here, and we do sell those as well and give crops to other facilities.
But the primary reason, the primary mission of your farm isn't necessarily to produce food and kind of like replace the food contracts from the DOC. It's a learning experience for the incarcerated workers, right?
Absolutely. We tend to believe that farming is kind of a dying trade, but that's absolutely not the case. And for most of the incarcerated individuals here, they come from most, not all, come from bigger cities where they would probably never have the opportunity to learn such a trade as farming. So it's a whole new experience for them as well.
Is that something that they volunteer for? Is that a job that's assigned to them? How does one get involved in the farming trade? Because to me, that would be something completely out of my, you know, wheelhouse as a city slicker, like you said, who has never set foot on a farm before. How are our inmates chosen for that particular job?
Well, so that's kind of a two-part question. We have something else that's unique to Rockview is our forestry camp. And our forestry camp is located out in the woods, away from the main facility. It does not have a fence. These inmates, they have to put in to qualify to live at the forestry camp. And it depends on their custody level, their programming, how close they are to release. But the inmates that live at the forestry camp also work the farm, and we have another program, arboriculture, the tree surgery, chainsaw repair courses. So the inmates that live at forestry camp work not only the farm, but they take care of our land as well, as far as the forestry goes.
So they're kind of getting a complete education when it comes to kind of the agricultural style.
Correct.
And I'm sure the folks that are interested in that kind of life, that being kind of outside of the facility, like you said, there's no fence, there's no barbed wire, that the forest serves as the fence, I guess. So they probably, it's probably a benefit for them to kind of be out of that hustle and bustle of the day-to-day facility life.
Absolutely. The forestry camp is a 72-bed building. It kind of looks like a big camp. If you were there, the camp was built using lumber from our own grounds and property. It's very unique, but it looks like a big camp, so to speak.
How does staff get chosen to work in the forestry camp? Because it seems like that's not just a life for everybody. It's not a CO in a forestry camp might be very different than a CO at a SEI Phoenix or SEI Chester.
Sure. And the forestry camp is, the bids there for officers are just like the bids inside. You know, they have to bid on a position there. And obviously, I would think that seniority has a big play in that, because it is a sought after position because it's a completely different atmosphere.
And what kind of opportunities are the incarcerated workers getting at the forestry camp? You mentioned like the chainsaw repair and I won't say the A word, the tree surgery that you talked about earlier. They're learning skills that they can use. Are they receiving any kind of certifications? What do they leave with?
Yes. So we actually partnered with DCNR and Penn State to offer that arboriculture program. So we have instructors that come from DCNR and Penn State and teach these guys how to climb trees, identify them, trim the trees, operate the chainsaws, timber harvest. So we've had inmates leave the forestry camp once they have finished their state sentence and go right into a working field through Penn Lines or another of tree trimming service companies. We actually invited one of the former inmates back to speak to the group, and he talked about his experience getting his certification while he was at forestry, leaving, getting employment through Penn Lines. He now has a house and a job, and he's, you know, living a normal life. And he was expressing to the guys that, you know, soak it all in. This is a great opportunity and take advantage of what is being offered. So it's actually a really good trade where they can leave and go right into a working field.
You mentioned Penn State at SEI Rockview. You're right in Penn State's backyard. What's your partnership like with them? What's your relationship like with the university?
We partner with Penn State quite a lot. So, you know, not only our forestry program, we had opened a neurocognitive care unit here at Rockview a few years ago, and Penn State came in to help us assess the needs, assist us in writing new policies and procedures, because, you know, we were the first in the state to open a dementia unit. So they assisted us with that. I believe they help our maintenance and construction of new buildings. We work a lot with Penn State, and it is convenient that they're right in our backyard.
Talk to me a bit about, we covered the forestry program, but the wood shop, another great program at SCI Rockview.
It has been in operation since February of 2008. There's four correctional industries staff. We have 59 inmates employed in the factory, and they build furniture for any kind of nonprofit agencies in the community. They've built furniture for churches, courthouses, local Elks lodges. They redid some chairs and reupholstered seats for the Phillipsburg Roland Theater. They make some beautiful work.
So this is a correctional industry shop, right? One of those by law in Pennsylvania correctional industries with the incarcerated workers, we can only sell to nonprofit organizations, maybe other government organizations. So it's not something that, not a product that we can go sell like in a store on the street, but other nonprofit or other government agencies can come to us, and we create, like you said, the kind of handcrafted furniture. I have a desk with the DOC seal right in my office that was created at your shop. How do inmates participate in that?
Again, they have to be staffed for different employment. Most inmates, when they come into the facility, usually start in culinary. There is a long waiting list to get into CI because the guys that work in CI, it is a higher rate of pay because it is a skilled position. And same thing applies. It'll go based on misconducts, programming. Have they received or finished their educational requirements? And of course, they get put on a waiting list until positions open up.
Talk to me about SCI Rockview's relationship with the community. We mentioned that you're right in the backyard of Penn State, but how do you get along in Center County with the folks there?
Okay, so again, the inmates that work at the forestry camp, mm-hmm. They also participate in a community work program. So this outside maintenance work detail helps with community projects. Again, nonprofit, it could be, I believe here last year, our CWP inmate crew went out and assisted cleanup and renovation of a community pool. They've helped renovate a little league field.
So we do get some folks that are concerned when they see community works program inmates out in the community, kind of giving back, doing those projects, but they're not just any inmates, right? These are the appropriate custody levels, appropriate programming. They're the folks that have been vetted to be on these crews.
And again, they have to be at least a custody level 2. They have had to have completed all their programming, educational requirements. They had to have been misconduct free for at least a year. And I say at least a year because it could be more, but I'm pretty sure it's at least a year. They have to meet all the checks and balances before they are even accepted into the forestry program. So everyone that is housed out at the forestry program is, for lack of better terms, the best behaved inmates.
And the same with the community works program inmates?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
If somebody is out there, manages a little league ballpark in your area, or needs something that the CWP could help with, how do they get in touch with the facility?
They would ask for me. They would ask for me, and then I will put them in touch with our forestry camp manager, Mr. Wade Reininger. I will put them in touch with him and see what services we can offer or provide to assist them.
We're chatting with Nikki Paul, the superintendent's assistant at SCI Rockview. The superintendent's assistants, as we know, they are the ones that keep our facilities running on a day-to-day basis. What would you say is the best part of your job?
I enjoy talking to families. I enjoy seeing inmates thrive and do well. I tend to see both mostly the negative things in a correctional facility, and it's nice to see the positive, the inmates that get their life turned around, to see that they can be successful in learning new skills and excited about what life has in store for them once they leave here.
Kind of like you were talking about the gentleman from the forestry camp.
Yes. And to see him come back and be excited and to talk to others that were in his shoes and say, you know, look, this is what I've accomplished. This is what you can do. Take this seriously. It gives them hope that they too can get out and live a better life.
We appreciate Nikki and Bernard for taking some time with us today. We'll be back next month with an in-depth look at two more state correctional institutions. You can learn more on our blog at cor.pa.gov and on social media. We're at CorrectionsPA on Facebook, X, and LinkedIn. That's all the time we have for today. On behalf of executive producer Kurt Bope, thank you for listening. I'm Ryan Tarkowski. Until next time.